Had I been told as a child in the 1950s that my life would one day run parallel with that of a penguin, that for a time, at least, it would be him and me against the world, I would have taken it in my stride. After all, my mother had kept 3 alligators at the house in Esher until they grew too big and too dangerous for that genteel town, when keepers from Chessington Zoo had come and removed them. She hadn't intended to keep alligators at the house in Esher. She had lived in Singapore until the age of 16, and on leaving to return to England, she had been given 3 eggs as a memento by her best friend in a tender and tearful farewell. The eggs had hatched, naturally, in her cabin during the long voyage, and so, naturally, she had to take them home with her. Years later, in wistful moments, she sometimes remarked that the imaginative present was perhaps the most effective keepsake she had ever been given. I knew wild and domestic animals well. My rural upbringing ensured I had a realistic view of life. I knew the fate of foxes and farm stock. However, exotic animals I knew only from zoos and my imagination. I, like Walt Disney Productions later, was inspired by the genius of Rudyard Kipling. I could identify completely with The Jungle Book and Kim, and his description of school days that were identical to my own more than half a century later. It's true, I was brought up with an Edwardian view of the world. My parents had been born in different parts of the empire, and I had grandparents, uncles, aunts, and cousins scattered around the globe. Australia, New Zealand, Canada, South Africa, India, Ceylon, now Sri Lanka, Singapore, Rhodesia, Zimbabwe, Nyasaland, Malawi, and so on. To me, these places seemed almost familiar. Several times a year, letters, and with rather less frequency than their authors, would arrive from those countries to fire my childish imagination with stories of darkest Africa and the like. But I wanted to explore somewhere different, uncharted territory, a real tierra incognita. South America was somewhere that nobody I knew appeared to have any experience of or connection with. So I had made up my mind while still at school that South America was where I would go when I grew up. At the age of 12, I bought a Spanish dictionary and secretly started learning Spanish phrases. When the opportunity arose, I'd be ready. It was some 10 years before that opportunity arrived, in the form of an advertisement in the Times Educational Supplement. Wanted, it said, for HMC boarding school in Argentina. The position was so clearly suited to my purpose that within half an hour, my application was in the postbox and ready to wing its way across the Atlantic, announcing that they need look no further. As far as I was concerned, I was on my way. I researched the economic and political situation before leaving, of course. An uncle in the Foreign Office gave me the inside track on the fragility of the Peronist government in Argentina. There was likely to be another bloody coup by the army at some stage, our intelligence suggested. Terrorism was rife, murder and kidnappings were everyday events. Only the army could restore any order, it was thought. My bank in London, meanwhile, furnished me with economic information on Argentina. Out and out, wholesale mayhem. In short, everybody said, in an avuncular sort of way, that going to Argentina was an absurd notion and, under such circumstances, quite out of the question. Nobody in their right mind would dream of going. This, of course, was exactly what I wanted to hear and all the encouragement I needed. I was offered the post of assistant master with residential responsibilities, but the terms of my contract were not terribly promising. The college would pay for 1 return flight, conditional on my staying for a full academic year. My UK superannuation would be paid and I would be remunerated in local currency. What that would be worth in terms of buying power locally, the headmaster couldn't say because of the prevailing economic shambles. However, I would be paid in accordance and commensurately with the other teaching staff. While I was resident in the college, food and lodging would be provided. That was it. I made sure I had enough money in the bank to buy a return flight from Buenos Aires in the event of an emergency, and my bank arranged with a branch of Banco de Londres y America del Sur in Buenos Aires that I could draw on funds in London should the need arise. But I didn't care about money. I was on my way. about to indulge that spirit of adventure I'd felt as a boy, to embark on a quest to seek my destiny, that fortune would assign me a penguin as a friend and fellow traveller, who would one day provide a wealth of bedtime stories for generations then unborn, was a singular twist of fate that still lay far over the western horizon. Juan Salvador was a penguin who charmed and delighted everyone who knew him in those dark and dangerous days, days that saw the collapse of the Peronist government in terrorist outrages and violent revolution as Argentina teetered on the verge of anarchy. It was a time when liberties, opportunities, and attitudes were so completely different from those of today. However, a young traveller like me and the inimitable, indomitable penguin Juan Salvador could, it turned out, be the happiest of companions after I rescued him in dramatic circumstances from deadly seas off the coast of Uruguay.